Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, 1st of September. We continue 10 o'clock on Tuesdays. We've been doing a whole series of, I think, very worthwhile programs on healthcare reform. We've gone to Canada and to France and to the Caribbean to ask questions about how they deliver healthcare. We've talked with all kinds of different people. The guest who had been suggested, who was to have been with us this hour, Wendell Potter, who worked for many years as with a major health insurance corporation, as head of corporate communication and the company's chief corporate spokesman, Wendell Potter, has been suggested by many of you to be a part of this series. And we did have him booked for today during this hour. He unfortunately had a last-minute change and could not make the appearance, but we will have him on the show fairly soon. Don't worry, we have a fabulous guest with us who's been with us many times before. Professor Helen Halpin is with us. She is a professor of health policy at the School of Public Health, University of California, Berkeley, and this woman really knows healthcare. Not only that, she knows exactly what negotiations are going on now in Washington, what's happening in the Senate, what's happening in the House, and the question has been asked, what in the world is happening with the administration as well? Are they letting this play out? As was suggested yesterday at a very interesting press conference, perhaps you saw, done by Robert Gibbs, who was complaining that the Republicans don't seem to be acting in a bipartisan fashion here. So are they, does that indicate that they might not go the route that people thought? Then they might be doing a reconciliation bill, which would only need so many Democratic votes. I don't know what it means, but we'll ask her. Just a reminder before we speak with Helen that we do have a major healthcare forum. We are broadcasting live from Frater Hospital based here in Milwaukee on September 16. It will be a full 2 hours. We will have doctors, nurses from and heads of major hospitals all over the Midwest, including Frater and hospital in Green Bay, and Mayo will be there, and we'll have representatives from Washington, from Congress. We will have people from the insurance companies. We will have people from who are uninsured, people from community clinics. It should be a very civil discussion of all that we're dealing with when it comes to healthcare reform. So we urge you to attend. It is free. It's in the Cancer Center, the new building at Frederick. And we invite you to be a part of the audience. But you need to call us to register because it's a small space and we can't have it overflowing. It's a hospital after all. So please call 227-2040. It's 414-227-2040 if you'd like to be a part of the audience. And we have to cut it off at a certain point because we won't have enough room. But we'd love to see you there. So call now. All right. For you to be a part of this conversation with Professor Halpin, our number is 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Helen. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, great pleasure. You know, I'm getting more confused as the days go on now. What do you think the administration is doing here? Last night it was suggested, Robert Gibbs did, that the Republicans don't seem to be acting in a bipartisan fashion, leading me to believe as a viewer of this that indeed they may be going the road of reconciliation.
Well, I think the administration has been pretty consistent, actually, all along in saying that they would like a bipartisan bill. But if that's not possible, and it increasingly appears that it's not, because this group of six has been, everyone's been waiting and looking at them in the Senate, in the Senate Finance Committee, to see what they're going to come up with. They were the great hope for some sort of bipartisan compromise. But it's increasingly clear that even though they have been negotiating, they really haven't been negotiating in good faith, and that several of the Republican members of that committee have now said they won't vote for any health care bill. So even if they get everything they want, they won't vote for it. So I think what's happened is that that group has really more or less fallen apart. Senator Baucus, who's the chairman of the Finance Committee and one of the Democratic members in that group, went back to his home state and heard in no uncertain terms from people who live in Montana Canada, they want the public option as part of health care reform, and he is now publicly supporting it. And my sense in looking at the rhetoric and the actions of many of the Democrats is that they are prepared to, no compromise is reached by the middle of September. I think there's some willingness maybe to stretch this a little longer, given Ted Kennedy's death and perhaps the willingness of senators to reconsider in light of that being the goal of his legislative career. I think they'll give it till about mid-September, and if it doesn't happen, I think they will create two different bills. One for the financing and for the public option that would go into a reconciliation bill that actually would only require 50 votes in the Senate, as Senator Biden could break a tie. And in the House, Nancy Pelosi already has enough votes to pass a comprehensive reform bill with a public option. And then they'd create a second bill, which the Republicans are very likely to support, that would include all of the regulations on the health insurance industry, eliminating pre-existing condition exclusions, having to sell to anyone who wants to, having to price premiums within certain guidelines so you can't charge people an arm and a leg for their health insurance, and not allowing insurers to cut you off when you reach a certain dollar amount in your benefits, not allowing them to drop coverage, all the protections for people who currently have insurance and for those who will be newly insured. But I see that as a separate bill, and that does have strong bipartisan support. So my guess at this point is that's where we're headed.
So that second bill then needs to be reconciled with the first bill in terms of the major difference, which would be the public option?
Well, no, the public option would be part of the reform in the reconciliation bill.
Okay.
What the second bill would be is basically just regulating the practices of the private health insurance industry.
Okay.
And so one's a regulatory bill and the other is a financing bill, of which the public option would be a critical part of that financing.
It's striking to me that we've gone back and forth, maybe because the debate has been so heated about all of this, as to what the American people want here. You're talking about Bacchus, who went back and his constituents want a public option. Where do we stand as a people here? You look at the fact that the Democrats won overwhelmingly. Is that what we want, or are we worried about it?
Well, I think it is what we want. If you look at the latest polls that have come out in the last couple weeks, one, I believe, found that 56% supported the public option. Another one came out, 77% would support a public option. I think there's tremendous confusion about what that means. What is a public option? It doesn't mean a government takeover of the healthcare system, which is what you hear the opponents chanting. That's not it at all. The public option is the creation of a new public plan like Medicare, but no one has to go into it if they don't want to. Mm-hmm. It will be one of the choices that you have, along with the other private health plans that serve your geographic area. And if you want to go into it, you can. And if you want to pick a private plan, you always have that option. So no one will be forced into a government program who doesn't want to go into a government program. And I think this point has gotten lost in all of the noise.
Right.
And it's such a critical point. The whole idea is to give people a choice.
But the fear must be, tell me if I'm wrong, that the government plan will operate at so much less cost and so much more efficiently that it will drive some of these private plans out of business? Is that what they're worried about?
Well, I guess maybe they're worried about that, but the president sees it from a different angle, and that is that because you can run a public program more efficiently, and we know you can, all you have to do is look at the Medicare program compared to private health insurance to see that. If you offer people a plan that's more efficient and they want it and they like it, the private plans will have to compete. That's what President Obama is arguing. Let's use competition as a driver to drive down costs and force the private plans to be more efficient. And you know what? If a private operation cannot be more efficient than the government, then they probably have no business operating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, it's a very strange argument, I think. Yes, you know, I think we all want to support for-profit enterprises in the United States. It's a key to our economy, and it's been a part of our country for as long as it's existed. But perhaps there are some things like medical care that are better provided as a social benefit rather than in a for-profit model. The problem with the for-profit model is so much of our healthcare dollar is spent on marketing and public relations and lobbying and goes to profits. Under a public system, all of that money can go towards getting people medical care. So you're likely to get more and better medical care under the public option than you are under the private system the way it currently operates.
Well, and you think also of all, and we've talked to many of them over these weeks here, under a for-profit system, it determines who you're going to insure, and you're less likely to dump people from your rolls if they are sick because they're going to cost you some money, right?
Well, that's no. If you're an for-profit insurance company, you're more likely to
Right.
dump someone when they get sick.
Yeah.
You're more likely to not renew their policy. You're more likely not to cover the conditions that they have, even if they weren't pre-existing when you bought the policy. You're going to get in a fight over whether you had it before you signed up or not. I mean, it's just it's not humane. You know, we're talking about people who are at the most vulnerable point in their lives. Being treated as economic commodities and as a loss to a profit center mm-hmm. when what they need is care and understanding and effective treatment and access to that treatment on a timely basis. So I think, you know, we really need to stop and think about what is healthcare? What does it mean to us? Do we want to be subject to the whims of a for-profit industry? And if the answer is yes, you'll still have that option. The insurance companies are not going to go out of business. If you look, you mentioned at the opening that you've looked at many different countries and how they provide healthcare. If you look at the countries that are even considered to have so-called socialized systems, they now, many of them, France included, offer private alternatives. But what we see, both in the U.S. under Medicare and in other countries, is when you have a public plan and you have private alternatives, about 80% of the population ends up deciding they want to be in the public plan, and only 20 or 30% ends up wanting the private coverage. But for those people who are wealthy and can afford it and are healthy, that option will always be there for them. As long as they're willing to spend the money, those corporations will be there willing to sell them a policy.
Yeah,
So I think it's just a matter of sorting out what they want and not closing off either option to anyone. I think the problem with not offering the public option is that you're not letting people have that choice
mm-hmm.
If you force everyone into private health insurance. So I think it's a compromise, really. It satisfies the single-payer advocates on the one hand in that they'll have a single-payer plan that they can go into, and it satisfies people who only want to support the private insurance industry because they'll have private plans that they can go into.
Right. So what's happened here is the voice of opposition to this plan so vociferous, and there's so much money, campaign money involved in terms of people who are lobbyists for some of these health insurance companies, you know, who used to be in Congress or staffers who used to work for people who are now with those. Is that the problem? Is it the problem of the administration not being clear enough in an explanation of how this rather dramatic change would occur, what a public option really is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for most people who currently have insurance, there won't be a dramatic change. If you have Medicare, you'll still have Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Medicaid, you'll still have Medicaid. If you work for a large employer that offers coverage, chances are most of them aren't going to just drop their coverage. Some of them may, but my guess is most of them will continue to offer that because that's a valuable benefit that they offer to compete for employees in their firms. So most people with employer insurance will be able to keep their benefits. And for those who lose their employer coverage, for those who are in companies where the employer decides decides, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to let people go into the exchange. When you go into the exchange, you'll actually have more choice than you had with your employer. You'll get basically all of the plans that are qualified in your area to choose from. And in addition, if you want, you can choose the public plan. So I think they've drummed up all this fear. It's a classic tactic, both of the Republican Party and of the healthcare industry over the long, long history of our effort to get to universal coverage. They try to scare the heck out of everyone that they're going to be worse off, that they're not going to be able to get the care they need, that they can't trust the government, and they inject all these crazy ideas like we're going to pull the plug on
grandma, right?
To scare people. And, you know, I would hope that after 8 years of the Bush administration, people would learn that not to fall for these scare tactics. I mean, I've been frustrated with the administration. I'll be the first to admit it. I don't feel they've done a really good job of explaining clearly what it is they want and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're really handed the ball over to the Congress.
Right.
But I think that President Obama is in close touch with the leadership of the Democratic Party. And I think they know what he wants. And I really think that when they come back this month from their August recess, at least 50 of them will have heard loud and clearly from their constituents that the public option is a deal breaker, that if you want to be reelected by the Democratic Party the next time you're up for reelection, you support this or the Democratic Party will not support you.
Oh,
and you better believe me, the constituent votes in the end are all that matters.
Interesting. What about the money for all of this, Helen? How in the world are we going to pay for it?
It's disgusting. I mean, $1.4 million every day from this industry lobbying the Congress. Not to mention that they're the ones that have set up all these fake groups to rally the angry mobs against healthcare reform. It's the insurance industry that's behind all that. This is not grassroots organizing. This is industry-motivated organizing to stir up anger and fear against health care reform. I think they thought that it might work, and you know what? It has worked every single time in the past. But I hope that this time it won't work, and the American people have woken up to their tactics, that they'll go to any ends to achieve their goal, and that it's in the best interest of the population to make sure that everyone has coverage and everyone has a choice that appeals to them as an individual American. And really, what could be more American than that, letting each person choose what they want?
Our guest this hour, Dr. Helen Halpin. She's a professor of health policy at the School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley. She's also director of that Center for Health and Public Policy Studies. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that is talk@WPR.org. She's put a lot on the table here, and I'm interested in hearing from you. What do you want in terms of health care reform? What are your concerns? Are you concerned that it's a government takeover? Are you concerned that the administration has not explained well enough what this would be? Are you concerned that you believe in public option, as a majority do, and you don't feel the members of Congress are responding to you? Let's bring it all out here. And just a reminder that we are having a public forum, a live program, 2-hour program, September 16 at Frederick Hospital in their new cancer center. We'll have a panel of 8 people who will be with us for the full 2 hours talking about all of these issues. And you're invited. It's free to you. However, you do need to register because it's a hospital setting and we need to have not a huge space. So it's not a huge space we're in, but you'll need to register to say you'll be there, because we can only have so many people there. 227-414-227-2040 is the number. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to you, 800-486-8655. Tom is our first caller from Sabisky. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. I've got a few concerns, a few questions. First of all, in this new bill that they want, are all insurance companies going to be required to be nonprofit and take some of the profit out of insurance and
No.
make it into a reasonable profit? The other thing is they got an insurance czar. Do they really need an insurance czar and just somebody that's responsible for the programs but answers to Congress? The other thing is will insurance companies still be able to group people, groups of people, and as the groups get sick, drop them and put them back in the shuffle so that they have to go to other insurance companies so it spreads them back out so that the sick people don't get all stuck in one insurance company, which causes them, you know, basically loss in profits. Another thing
let's go to those first, and then.
Okay, so in terms of will they require companies to be nonprofit or limit their profits? No, they won't. There really isn't much precedent for doing that. I think they'll remain profitable, but in order to compete, maybe they're going to have to spend a greater percentage of their healthcare dollar on actual medical care. Some of the proposals would actually require them to spend a certain percentage. For example, 85% of every premium dollar would actually have to go to medical care. And that would accomplish, I think, the same objective, but in a different way. In terms of an insurance czar, I'm not aware of an insurance czar. It's possible that perhaps there is such a thing in one of these bills, but in the major bills that I've seen, I haven't seen anything like that. There will be an individual, probably the Secretary of Health and Human Services, who is responsible for overseeing this whole thing. And if there is a new public option, then there would be someone who would be responsible for directing that. But I don't know anything about an insurance czar. And in terms of sick people clustering in one plan, all of the bills include provisions to do what's called risk adjusting premiums, so that if a sicker person goes into a plan, that plan would get more premium dollars for that individual than they would get for the healthy individual, regardless if they go into the public plan or to any of one of the private plans. And any qualified plan could compete in the exchange as long as they agree to play by the rules in the exchange. So they can't turn anyone down. They can't limit coverage for pre-existing conditions. They can't put limits on how much they'll pay, et cetera, et cetera. They can't dump you in the middle of the year or the end of the year. They have to renew your policy if you want to remain in coverage. And the way most of these things are set up, if you get into a plan that you don't like, there's an annual renewal period when you'll have a chance to choose a new plan if you're not happy with it. So I think there are a lot of protections built in to accomplish what it sounds like your objectives are, but perhaps in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I think I read from Wendell, actually, that health insurance dollars now, only 70% go for medical care. You talked about 85%. The rest are going to make stockholders happy.
Yes. Well, the estimates vary. Anywhere from 15 to 30, I've seen. And this would try to put a ceiling on at 15.
I see.
The Medicare program, on the other hand, only spends 3%
right
on administrative costs. So 97 cents out of every dollar in Medicare goes to care, whereas between 70 to 85 cents of every dollar in the private sector goes to care.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom, very much for your call. We go to Dave from Minocqua. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I've got a couple of questions. The first is has to do with Medicare versus private insurance. And I'm aware that if you're in a small hospital, if you're a small hospital CFO, they pay approximately, that is Medicare, about 75% of the cost of actually treating the particular disease being covered. And if you're in a large hospital, like Freighter, for example, that actually they end up being paid actually less than that of their actual full cost of running their hospital in the neighborhood of about 60% or 65%. So that, in effect, if you talk to a CFO at a hospital, he'll tell you, he or she will tell you that who fixes that for the hospital is actually private insurance, makes up that difference in increased fees that they're charged by the hospital. So now we have Obama who says he wants to take half a trillion dollars of inefficiency out of Medicare to fund this public health or this option he's talking about, and I don't get the math. How can you take a half a trillion dollars out of Medicare, which right now isn't paying its full weight, and expect the insurance
company
to compete with public plans.
The half a billion dollars that he wants to cut doesn't cut the Medicare benefits or the Medicare payment levels at all.
I'm sorry. Can you, Helen, start over? We had two people talking at once. Thanks.
Oh, I'm sorry. The $500 billion that he wants to cut over 10 years doesn't cut Medicare's benefits. It doesn't cut the payments to providers. What it does is things like if for HMOs right now, the government's paying them 14% more than it costs them to care for their Medicare patients. So Medicare HMOs right now are making a 14% profit. And what Obama would do is take that profit away from them and pay them what it costs them, not 14% more. And there are many, many things like this that right now don't make any sense, and we're wasting lots of money, and there are huge savings to be made without sacrifice. Obama does not want to hurt the hospitals. He wants us to have terrific hospitals to go to. He doesn't want Medicare patients not to be able to get the services they need. He wants them to have even better benefits than they have right now. In fact, one of the first things they plan to do is improve the drug benefit. So, I mean, I think that, again, this is part of this scare tactic that they're going to hurt the elderly. President Obama does not want to hurt the elderly. He does not want to hurt the hospitals, and he does not want to hurt the doctors. And I think if you can get your head in that place and step back and say, well, maybe there really are these other kinds of things that could be cut that over time would save this huge amount of money. These are legitimate cuts without hurting beneficiaries, and I don't know how I can say that any more clearly.
Well, with due respect, ma'am, you didn't answer my question. And here's my question. How can insurance companies be expected to compete with Medicare with public option when Medicare only pays 75% of the cost to hospitals and insurance now makes that up? They cannot compete at those rates.
Well, I just want to question your assumption, sir, because what Medicare pays relative to the private insurance varies dramatically all over the country. In fact, in California, Medicare has been one of the highest payers, and they're making up for the low payments of the HMOs in California. So it's not easy to generalize around this. I think that payment reform is one of the important things that needs to happen, because we also have gross inequities in payment among physicians as well, and specialists are being paid tremendously high rates, whereas our primary care doctors can't even make their costs meet. So I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of the need of payment reform, and I think this bill will do everything that it can to try to address that and to make the system more equitable. Because you're right, if the private insurers continue to pay higher costs than the Medicare program, it would be very difficult for them to compete.
What a complicated system we've got, isn't it? I mean, it's just
it's
so
ridiculous.
Hard to figure your way through this morass. Oh, thanks, Dave, very much for your call. Let us go next to Roger from Spring Grove, Minnesota. Hi, Roger.
Good morning. First of all, I'm for the public option, and I'm for that because if you look at it, what insurance does, the whole notion of insurance as a social institution that takes a broad range of categories, demographics of people, income earners, people that are sick, people that are wealthy, and the larger group you have, the more you're able to control costs, because you're not at one time insuring all sick people or all health people. You're broadening your range of people that are in there, so that you're controlling costs just by doing that. And I think the insurance companies have taken this idea of a social institution of that insurance is, and they've chopped it up. They've taken wealthy people with lots of money. They've taken poor people. They've excluded people that tend to bring the cost of delivery down.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right. And the bigger the pool, the more you can spread that cost across more people, and the less it is per person. So you've got the math absolutely right on that one. And what the private insurance companies do, and I think this gets to the previous caller's question as well, is they cherry-pick the healthy people. If you have any sort of pre-existing condition, if you have asthma, if you've had cancer, for goodness sake, if you've even seen a doctor, my niece was turned down by a company in California because she'd been to the doctor. doctor in the last year. They won't offer you coverage. So they've got this very healthy group. Well, if you've got a really healthy group, the probability of one of them going to the hospital is relatively small. So you can afford to pay a lot for their care. Whereas if you've got a group like Medicare and the elderly, where most of them have at least one, if not more, chronic conditions, the probability of them going to the hospital is much higher. So I think you really have hit on something. We want to create the biggest pool we possibly can to cover this broad swath of Americans and pay in, because the odds of any one of us getting really sick is relatively small if we've got a big pool, which makes the cost to each of us significantly lower.
Thank you so much for your call, Roger. Jim is next from Denmark. Hi, Jim.
Yes. I just wanted to ask her a few questions because, number one, some of the other countries that have tried this already haven't been very successful, and I think you already know that. The other thing is...
What countries are you talking about, Jim?
Which countries are those?
I'm talking about Canada and some of the other countries overseas, over in Germany or wherever that is, over in Europe. There's been a few.
What do you mean they haven't been successful? They're healthier, they live longer,
What's in other words...
They cost less.
Hey, go ahead and laugh.
Well, I will, because everyone in those countries is covered, and they can see a doctor when they need one, and their hospitalization is completely covered. And it costs, they spend less than half of what we do in this country, and we have 50 million people who can't get care.
And listen to me first, because you're doing all the talking, you're not listening.
All right, Jim, go ahead.
That's rude.
Go ahead, Jim.
I wanted to explain myself. In the first place, I am for it to a degree, but I still think it's not going to totally work, and you know it. And it's always like this one person that I can't remember the senator's last name. His first name was Frank, or his last name's Frank. He was on television last week, and this young lady come up and asked him a question, a civilized question, and he couldn't answer it. And he says, I'm not going to spend my time talking to you. Now, that was rude.
All right, Jim, what are your concerns? Let's get to the nitty-gritty here.
What my concerns are, let the public, let us, we're the majority, let us vote on this instead of having them vote on it. And not only that, it should be clarified.
You elected your representatives. If you feel that way, you should call them and tell them how you feel.
You're interrupting again. That's rude.
No, she's not.
You know what the saying is? If you learn to have patience to listen, you're going to learn a lot more and be able to establish a lot more. And you're not doing that, ma'am.
Jim, I'm trying to figure out what your opinion is here. I mean, I'm not getting it.
I already explained it. The thing is, my opinion is that the fact I don't think it's really going to work because in other countries it didn't. And the thing is, the government, the president, and all these Democrats are pushing this on us. And we are the people. We're the majority. We're more than they are. Let us vote on this thing.
All right. Well, I would just
say that no other country has ever tried what we're trying. No other country has ever given their population the choice of whether they want a public plan or not. In most of the countries that you named, they started out forcing everyone into the government program and have increasingly given them options for private coverage. In this country, we have developed predominantly a private system, and we're increasingly offering people public options. But under Obama's proposal and what the Senate Democrats and the Congressional Democrats are proposing, there would be no government takeover of the system. You would only go into the public plan if you wanted to. If you want to keep private insurance, you will have every right to do that. And no one will force you into anything that you don't want. So I just want to make clear that you understand that no other country has tried this before. We are giving Americans the choice. Other countries haven't given their people the choice. So you will have a choice, sir, and no one will force you into the public plan.
Now I'm going to say this also. Then you better go ahead and make sure all of us United States people have a script of all that information and have people explain it every inch of that thousands of papers or thousands of papers that are made out for this in detail. Explain in detail, because most people aren't going to take the time and most people don't understand it and won't understand it, and it'd be just Congress and the Senate and Democrats and Republicans and the President that are only going to understand it.
Well, I would agree with Jim that somebody needs to explain
it.
Yeah, I agree.
You're absolutely right. They've done a terrible job explaining it. And the amount of misunderstanding and misinformation has been just disgusting. And from someone like me, I have read all 1,100 pages of these various bills. And I do understand it. And when I can talk to people, you know, in a civil way, and explain to them what is in there and what isn't in there, I think they come away feeling much better about it. But for the average person who can't read it and who just gets their information either from talk radio or Fox News, you're going to be scared and you're going to be confused and you're not going to understand what's going on. And it's a terrible situation we're in because I feel like the people right now can't make an informed decision because they don't have the information they need.
Right. I agree. Jim, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest this hour is Helen Ann Halpin, professor of health policy, director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health. And her best qualification you just heard is that she has read all 1,100 pages of these bills, and so she knows of what she speaks. We're talking about health care reform, what's in the House, what's in the Senate, what the public option is, why it has not been explained very well, which direction the administration is likely to go, which direction you would like to have them go. So join us. Our lines are crowded. Just keep trying and you'll get through. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I forgot to remind you that Jane Goodall is going to be with us tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Her latest book is Hope for Animals and Their World, How Endangered Species Are Being Rescued from the Brink. Special booking tomorrow at 9, Jane Goodall. All right, let's go to Paul from Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. I want to commend your guest for her comments, especially concerning the inability so far of the president to fully explain what's going on. It's like there's a perfect storm happening here. First of all, you have, by age, you have the young invincibles, and I used to be one of those. I was a ski bum and a construction worker in my 20s for 5 years, two fairly dangerous occupations, and never had health insurance. And part of the plan is to get those people into the system. Then you have the middle group that largely are what you see at these rallies, and they are the invested people. They have health care coverage. And then you have, now I'm disabled now, and I've been on Social Security disability for over 10 years. And I'm not worried about my Social Security or Medicare. I'm really not. But that's where a lot of the fear is coming in, and that's where the voters are. So I think the president really needs to spell it out. You know, the one thing about the public plan or public option that I think is escaping a lot of people's attention is its portability. And if you are a young person and you're like me when I was in my 20s, where you're, you know, you're moving around, you're changing jobs, you're doing this, that, and the other thing, that public option will give you the portability to carry that insurance no matter where you go. Unlike, you know, you go change jobs, a lot of times you got to wait 6 months to get on the company plan.
Right.
And I think that if the president would just come out and, you know, talk to the whole country, he could put a lid on a lot of this stuff.
Helen.
Well, you know, I think he's tried, but it is tough. There's even, I think, just to even go further, the plans that are in the works now would provide that same protection, that portability, to people who chose a private plan in the exchange. Anybody who went into the exchange, they could never have their insurance taken away if you changed your jobs, if you became sick. It's guaranteed. And so, you're right, and the problem is it's so complicated, and there's so many different moving parts to this thing. It's hard to know what piece to focus on, because I don't think anyone would sit and actually listen to a detailed description of what's involved. I think what the president has tried to do is sort of take the view from 40,000 feet, but I think that leaves tremendous room for misunderstanding and misinterpretation. And so it's really a dilemma, and I agree with you. I would like for him to sit down in prime time and have a fireside chat with us and to just look at us in the eyes and talk straight to us and says, this is what I hope it does, and this is what I don't want it to do, so that people could understand much more clearly what will happen to them if this goes into effect. And as I tried to say before, if you work for a large employer or you have Medicare or Medicaid, things won't change much for you. In fact, you'll probably have more protections. And if you're uninsured or you work for a small employer, you'll have these fantastic options. You'll have probably better choices than most employed people have, including this new public plan. So maybe it can be done that simply. I'm not sure. But I agree, there's a desperate need because the summer has been crazy, and they're all about to come back to the Congress now, and they've heard from their constituents who are angry on both ends, those who say it won't be worth it if you don't include a public plan, and those who say, you know, if you include a public plan, we're on the road to socialism. Right. So, and neither, you know, maybe neither side is right, and I'm hoping that maybe with increased understanding they can find more common ground.
Thanks, Paul, for your call. Tom from Burlington, hi.
We have here in Wisconsin Congressman Kagan, and his one of his ideas is for the in the private sector to make sure that all of what they give you is standardized. He wants to make do that. Now, that's just one thing. The other point is I'd like to make is with the what if we go with the private with the public and with the public side, the public insurance.
Mm-hmm.
What system around the world? They talk about Singapore has a good system and Spain has a good system, and I don't know if you've studied this or not, but what system would you recommend that might be able to fit well with our system if we go with the private and the public thing, or what?
Right. Well, I think in terms of even within our own country, Medicare is the best example. That's what it'd be like. But I think if you look at other countries, I think most people would agree that France actually has the best system. And it's totally financed through the tax system, so that when you go to the doctor and you go to the hospital and you go to the pharmacy, you don't pay anything out of your pocket. There's no lines or waits to get care because everyone has coverage. So you only go to the doctor when you need to go to the doctor, and there's not a big backlog. You only go to the emergency room when there's an emergency. And cost, I mean, if you go to the hospital, and even if you're a foreigner, and you ask them about billing, they look at you strangely. There's no billing department. So I don't think the U.S. will ever have a system like that. I think the U.S., the public plan that we're talking about in the U.S. looks like Medicare, where you have private doctors and private hospitals, but the government finances it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the closest thing, I think, that there is in the world to what President Obama and the Congress now are talking about when they mention this public plan.
And I believe we did a show in France about a month ago. I believe, Helen, that they pay, which struck me as, well, this is something, for the medical education for their doctors and nurses.
Well,
we do too, actually.
Medicare is the primary financer of medical education in the U.S.
Really?
Yes.
I never
they basically
that.
Train all the hospital doctors in the hospitals. It's all Medicare payments.
Huh. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom, very much for your call. Willie from Madison, hello.
Yes, hello. I'd just like to preface my comments about to win and influence people, one has to maintain credibility, integrity, and character. And the thing that really troubles me, and I voted for Obama, and it's sad to say, with respect to the confluence of events, I am very, very pessimistic about there being health care reform in America this year.
The reason being is simple.
I believe that the Obama administration, the Democratic-controlled Congress, have basically misused their custodial care of the government from January to the present. And the residual impact of that is so pronounced that there is no way that this will ever be achieved, one, without bipartisan support. Two, there is just such a cloud and confluence of total breakdown of character integrity of the Obama administration and the Congress that the American people will not allow this to pass by default.
Breakdown and of what, Willie? What's breaking down?
Breaking down, one, you got all of this stuff. First of all, this president comes in and he says Blagojevich should not send any appointment to the Senate in his seat. Mm-hmm. He backed down on that. Don't ask, don't tell. He backed down on that. Interrogation of detainees, flip-flop. And what the American people are now saying, we simply have no trust, faith, and confidence in this leadership structure.
Okay, Dr. Halpin?
Well, all I can say is I hope you're wrong. I mean, none of us knows what will happen. I still have faith that President Obama is sincere in his desire to get health care and good health care to all Americans. And I believe the Democrats want that, too. And honestly, I think what the Republicans have been saying in terms of this being his Waterloo, in some respects, is true. That if he fails to do this, he probably will only be elected for one term. I think he's willing to really go out on a limb and you know, he's given the Congress enough rope to hang himself. But I do believe, especially in light of the recent death of Senator Ted Kennedy, that there is the political will to get this thing done. And you know what? I think we'll know pretty quickly. I think we'll know by the end of September whether it's going to happen or not. So I guess all I would do is ask you to go back into campaign mode and have hope for a few more weeks and make your views known about what you want to your representative and your senators as loudly and clearly as you can, and let the people's voice be heard.
Thank you, Willie, very much for your call. And I know everybody wants to talk longer. I'm sorry, but we just have so many phone calls coming in. Mike from Appleton, hi.
Yeah, hi. Just two very quick questions. Your guest says that she's read the bill. I'd just like her to answer two questions.
Sure.
First one is, she says that if there is a private and a public option, that, you know, we'll be able to choose our doctors and have choices. The reality is that over a period of time, probably 5 years, the private sector will disappear because it can't compete with the government. I mean, there's, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. There's no question about that. So in reality, that choice that we have is going to, little by little, it will disappear. Second question, with regards to Medicare, in any doctor's office in any given day, let's say that there's 20 patients waiting to see the doctor. Of those 20 patients, let's say 15 are on private health insurance and 5 are on Medicare. The reality is that those 15 who are on private care are subsidizing the ones who are on Medicare, because the doctor, let's say, charges $100 for each of the 15, and $25 is what he's paid by Medicare for seeing the other 5. So, again, 2 + 2 = 4, and what is going to happen is that the doctors, let's say 5 years from now, are only going to be able to get what the government pays them. And so obviously there's going to be a huge deficit there of their income. And so you're going to have an exodus of people from the medical field. And, you know, we're going to end up subsidizing Medicare to cover the difference that was being paid for before by the private health insurance.
Dr. Halpin.
Well, all I would say is that if the choice disappears, it's going to be because the American people rejected the private plans and chose to go into the public plan. So the American people will drive what happens. If Americans still, in significant numbers, want private insurance, those plans will survive. If they don't, they may not. But but each individual, as they make their own choice, will help determine that outcome. As far as the payment, we talked about that a little bit before, but I think you need to understand how unhappy physicians are now with the current system. They've been leaving in droves because the insurance system is making them crazy. The amount of paperwork and the amount of administrative staff and the amount of control that administrators are taking over the care they can give their patients is driving them out. And so I think they would be, my guess is many of them would be much happier with a slightly smaller payment if that's what happens, without these huge administrative costs. They'd actually be able to keep more of the health care dollars for themselves than having to pay four or five staff to handle all these insurance claims and processing and prior approvals and, you know, second opinions and all these things that the insurance companies require to try to delay and deny care. So there's a trade-off, and I don't think any of us know how this will balance out, but I think the idea behind this plan is to give doctors more control over the care they provide and give people more control over the care that they choose, and we'll let that determine the outcome rather than a government imposing only one system, all of us, or a free-for-all sort of like we have now with just the private sector.
Yeah. Well, Helen, thank you so much for being with us again. You are so well. You're one of the best informed people on this issue I know of. You just know what you're talking about. So it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you.
It's complicated.
It is complicated, but you make sense for us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our guest, Dr. Helen Ann Halpin. She's a professor of health policy and director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to John Treader for on-air production in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. Tomorrow we'll be with you from 9 to 11. Just a reminder, a special guest. She's really hard to book, and Rhonda's been trying for a long time. Tomorrow, Jane Goodall. Her latest book is Hope for Animals and Their World, How Endangered Species Are Being Rescued from the Brink. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network.